right, so I need to acknowledge my co-authors of David Nielsen, Perry Miller, Brian McConkie, Gary Peterson, Alan Schlegel. Without their help, I wouldn't have anything to share with you, so that was key. So why this subject? And Perry kind of alluded to this a little bit. This paper came out, C.M. Pittelkow et al., 2014, in Nature. And the title of the paper was Productivity Limits and Potentials of the Principles of Conservation Agriculture. And it was a metadata analysis. They had 610 studies, 48 different crops, 63 countries. But one of the overall conclusions from the metadata analysis was that overall no-till reduces yields. And I think if you're involved in conservation ag, you ought to read this paper. There are some good things in it that you can glean from that. But they had this caveat, and the caveat read something like this. The response is variable, and under certain conditions, no-till can produce equivalent or greater yields than conventional tillage. And I sort of feel like all of us in the northern and central Great Plains fit this caveat, okay? So what I'm going to do today is share some data. But first, we're going to give you some background on the semi-arid area, northern and central Great Plains. And then I'm going to say a little bit why we got into no-till in the first place, give you some of the reasons for that. And then we're going to look at a transect going from Canada down to Kansas. And then I'm going to say a little bit about why no-till works for us at Akron, Colorado. And then I'll finish up with some closing remarks. So here's the region that we're most concerned about. Really the semi-arid dry land portion of the continent, predominant spring wheat, winter wheat growing region of the country, hundreds of millions of acres. We're going to look at some data from Swift Current, Kansas. Whoops, excuse me if I get my mouse to work here. Swift Current, Canada, and then go down to Bozeman, share some data out of Akron, Colorado, and then finish up with Tribune, Kansas. When you look at the precipitation pattern for the four locations, it becomes very obvious that it's really spring, summer, rainfall. It's a spring, summer, rainfall climate zone. The relative differences are there, but the take-home message is it's summer and spring rainfall. Look at the relative amounts there for the locations. You see Swift Current comes in with the least amount of precipitation at 377 millimeters per year. Tribune, Kansas, with the most at 454 millimeters. However, temperature is quite a bit different, quite a bit cooler at Swift Current, Canada. And then with Kansas being at 11.4 degrees centigrade on average. And this other quantity they have in parentheses is the open pan estimate. And so it sort of integrates a lot of things, but it integrates both temperature and wind run and relative humidity and things like that. And what you see is that at Tribune, Kansas, it's almost twice the amount of open pan evaporation that you see at Swift Current, Canada. I'm going to show you one precipitation pattern here for Akron, Colorado. I'm not going to show you all four locations because they're all very similar, very erratic. We have precipitation on the vertical axis versus time and years going across the bottom here. And you can see that we might average 418 millimeters a year, represented by that blue dashed line in the center, but rarely do we hit the average. It can be as great as 686 millimeters one year and as little as 221 millimeters the next year. And you combine that erratic pattern of precipitation that oscillates between wet and dry from year to year, combined with that the fact that evaporative demand is anywhere between 4 to 6 times what you get as precip, and you can see why that wheat fallow system developed. Okay, this is where you crop wheat one year, and then for the next 13 to 14 months you try to store a little precipitation to reduce the risk of crop failure in the cropping season. So I'm showing you that what that looks like. Here's winter wheat phase there, and then we've got the no-till fallow phase below, 14 months of no-till summer fallow, wherein it's all about precipitation storage efficiency. How much water can we store in that residue during that 14-month period to reduce the risk of crop failure when we finally get back to cropping it? Okay, so let's talk about precipitation storage efficiency just a little bit. This is some data that was summarized in 1996 by Gary Peterson. Basically, he found that when you took a transect of the Great Plains, it might maximize at about 30%, but on average, it's only about 25%. And then a little bit later, David and I published a paper where we were just looking at data from Akron, and we really didn't improve it much. So there's a little bit of improvement there, but not much. And so what does this mean? It means that 65 to 70% of the precipitation that falls during summer fallow is simply lost as evaporation. So the bottom line is you might as well put that water through a crop as lose it. And so this is a slide or a table that I borrowed from Gary Peterson. And what you're looking at here is an increase in rotation intensity as we go from wheat fallow, one crop in 2 years, to two crops in 3 years, three crops in 4 years, and down to continuous cropping. And what you see there in the middle there is water use efficiency, the pounds of grain produced per acre inch in the system. And it's increasing. It's not consistently increasing, but they're all greater than wheat fallow. And so what no-till has allowed us to do in the central Great Plains, northern and central Great Plains, is increase the intensity of cropping. That's probably the biggest thing that's done for us. If you tried to grow these crops without no-till, they'd be failures. You couldn't do wheat, corn, fallow without no-till. It just doesn't work. You never get the corn up. The other thing that no-till has done is dealt with this issue, has prevented this issue. And you've all seen this slide. I got this from Rob Aiken back in 2004. Dust storm about a quarter mile high, and you can see the land's been tilled in the foreground. And when I see that, I right away start thinking about no-till. I just can't help it, because I know if we eliminated the tillage, we could probably eliminate the problem. I know that we could eliminate the problem. We'll show you some slides later that really show that. And then we'll say a little bit about what an inch of stored soil water is worth and how that fits into the system. Okay, so let's get to some of the data sets here. And we're going to start with Brian McConkie's data out of Swift Current. And here's that first data set. And what we have is two cropping systems, a continuous spring wheat system compared to a wheat legume system, being managed with no-till on the top here. And then, let's see if I can get my arrow to come up. Yeah, here we've got no-till on the top here being compared to a tilled system. And you can see that in all cases, the yields are higher. We'll just look at one of them. The 1,940 kilos per hectare being produced in the continuous wheat system where we don't have tillage. And then where we have tillage, it's only about 1,700 kilograms per hectare. That theme of improved yields is all throughout the table. What's interesting to me is this is a 13-year experiment. So this isn't just 1 year data. This is 13 years, an average of 13 years of data. But what's really interesting to me is that when you looked at pre-plant water content, which is in this column, there is no difference. There is no advantage for no-till. And that just really puzzled me because at Akron, it's all about pre-plant soil water content and how much we can store. And so I asked Brian, what's going on there? And he said, well, you need to look at these changes in organic matter. And his take on this is that you didn't really see the differences show up until the last 6 years. So there might have been some differences, but the real advantage of this system didn't show up until later. And he explains it away as changes in surface properties, changes in organic matter, changes in microclimate. And I'm going to show you another slide here that sort of supports that. So this is a really interesting experiment, another one I really recommend you guys take a peek at. It's a Canadian Journal of Plant Science 2011, Cutforth et al., volume 91. And what they did is they had spring wheat, and they cut the stubble at different heights. So I believe it was 10 centimeters, 15 centimeters, and 30 centimeters, and 45 centimeters. That zero is supposed to be 10 centimeters, I believe. And they planted spring crops back into that stubble, canola, chickpeas, and another crop of spring wheat. And you see that in all cases, they got an increase in water use efficiency as measured by increased grain yields. So somehow that taller stubble is impacting the growth of that crop and providing a better microenvironment, whether it's reducing wind issues or what it's doing. It's doing something that's imparting an increase in ultimately an increase in grain yield. So here's Perry's data, and this is wheat grain yields on the vertical axis here versus time. And we've got the dark bar represents the wheat fallow yields in a conventional till system, and the lighter colored bar is the wheat fallow yields in a no-till system. The asterisk is indicating significance at the 10% level, and some of these are actually significant at the 5% level, and we'll show you some of that. But overall, four of the six comparisons here, we're seeing an increase in wheat yields with no-till. When you run analysis of variance on all six comparisons, that significance is still there. Perry split the data out for me by N rate. Oops, got something there. I don't want to say anything about that just yet. By an adequate regime, adequately fertilized nitrogen regime, and then a half N rate regime. And in both cases, no-till is still slightly better, about 0.2 megagrams per hectare, more yield in both of these systems. And then Perry also shared some soil water data, and this is in the top 90 centimeters of soil, and you could see about 2.2 centimeters more water at planting time with no-till. Okay, so let's look at some data from Akron, Colorado. And there's a whole bunch of data here, but it's because I have a lot of data there, right? There's actually 16 fixed crop rotations, but I'm just going to talk about seven of them. And what we've got here on this first column is wheat, corn, millet, fallow, so three crops in 4 years, wheat, corn, fallow, two crops in 3 years, wheat, millet, fallow, compared to two continuous crop rotations, and then both of those being compared to a wheat, fallow, no-till, and a wheat, fallow, conventional till. Whoops, didn't want to do that. But if you look at the yield for a given cropping season, that might be kind of interesting. We've got 3 megagrams per hectare of wheat for the wheat, fallow, no-till system. But really, it's all about annualized yield. It takes 2 years to grow that crop, right? So when you look at those values for annualized yield for the other systems, you can see that these others are all much better. The total production is quite a bit higher. Wheat, corn, fallow is kind of the winner there. Two crops in 3 years. A whole lot more biomass being produced for that system. Grain yield being produced for that system. Then if we do look at just the wheat yield, it's a 0.8 megagram increase in wheat yield, or 11 bushels per acre average increase on a 21-year average analysis. And why is that happening? Well, this is some pre-plant soil water data at Akron, Colorado. This is another paper of David's that he let me be co-author on. And what you see here is soil depth going down to 180 centimeters. The open circles is the soil water in the conventional till system. And the closed circles is the soil water in the no-till system prior to planting wheat. So this is pre-plant wheat. And when you subtract the first curve, the conventional till curve from the no-till curve, you get what you see here. And that adds up to, that adads up to 9.6 centimeters more water in the no-till system. So at Akron, we are seeing huge differences in pre-plant soil water. Now we're going to Kansas, and this is sorghum grain yields on the vertical axis against available soil water at planting time plus in-season rainfall. And you can see right away that no-till response is higher. It corresponds to about, on average, if you look at the available soil water at planting time, the average condition plus in-season rainfall that's received during the growing season for sorghum, that's what this red line indicates, and it's about a 15 bushel increase in grain sorghum yields. Now, Alan did this. This is, oh, I need to say that too. This is 30 years of data. This is a lot of data. They also did this for wheat, again, 1973 to 2003, so I think probably Alan was in high school at the time when some of this data was collected. So you were probably in high school when some of this data was collected, the early data. But the same kind of response, you see that the no-till response is at above the conventional till response. It's not quite as great as what we see at Akron. If you take the average available soil water at planting time plus in-season precipitation for wheat, it's about a 2 to 6 bushel increase in yield. Alan also summarized additional soil water at planting time for several locations. The value at the bottom here is one that I got from him from unpublished data. So this is personal communication data. But basically you can see that overall there's an increase in water in no-till versus conventional till. This is some of our older data, and I inserted the new data that David published in 2010 with me. And then, of course, you can see the same thing with wheat sorghum fallow and additional water there above what you would see in a conventional till system. Okay, so let's summarize the four locations. And this isn't 610 studies, but it is 74 site years of data, so it is a big data set. And what we're going to do is just look at those comparisons where we have a direct comparison between no-till and conventional till. And so we'll put those in there. And if we put in the no-till yields and put in the conventional till yields and subtract them from the other, subtract conventional till yields from the no-till yields, you end up with a positive column. Okay, quite a bit of yield here with the grain sorghum, 963 kilos per hectare, and quite a bit of yield here at Akron for wheat. Convert those data to bushels, because I tend to think in bushels. and I think some of you might as well. And then just look at the wheat yields. You can see there is quite a lot of variability in the data. And that fits that caveat that's in that paper, that there is a lot of variability in this kind of data. If we include then the water at planting time, there was no advantage for pre-plant water. There was no increase in pre-plant water at Swift Current. Slight increases here at Bozeman, a lot of water there at Akron, and a little bit less water there at Tribune. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you why I think it works. And I just love this slide because it really, and it shows a lot of things. That land's not going to blow when you have that kind of stubble. Okay, of course, we're kind of worried about the wheat stem sawfly. You know, you've heard about wheat stem sawfly is not going to allow us to have this kind of stubble. But that land's protected. It's not going to blow. It's not going to move. It's protecting the crop that's growing there. So how different is this from this? How different is tilling the land versus spraying it? And so I'm going to show you an experiment that's been there since 1967, where we've got a comparison of three tillage treatments, a moldboard plow where we invert the top 25 centimeters of soil. Also, there's a sweep till system, basically the stubble mulch system where we're tilling about 8 to 10 centimeters deep, and a reduced till system, which is sort of a hybrid between the two. We spray that crop after harvest, let that stubble go through the winter standing erect, and then if we get a weed flush early in the spring and it's still wet, we'll spray it one more time. So it might get sprayed twice, and then when it starts to warm up and tillage starts to work a little bit better and the soil starts to dry out, then we'll go to tillage. That's all three of those are being compared back to standard no-till practices where herbicides are used only, no tillage at all. Okay, so what we do in this experiment is we're measuring soil water before the tillage event occurs. These are gravimetric measurements, 0 to 15 centimeters, and then 15 to 30 centimeters. And then we come back 2 days later, take those measurements again, and then repeat that in 4 days later. So I'm going to share three events, or the mean of three events. These were taken in 2007, 2008, 2009, four replications. So the means that I'm going to share with you in the next graph are an average of 12 measurements. And here we have it. We've got soil water loss on the vertical axis in millimeters. We've got our management systems here. Moldboard plow, you can see the dark bar is soil water loss out of the top 15 centimeters, and the light-colored bar is soil water loss out of that next increment. And what you can see is that the greater inversion, the greater the soil water loss. You're getting water loss out of both layers. It adds up to about 23 millimeters 2 days after the tillage event. And then if we go to the sweep till, about 16 millimeters loss there, and then the sweep till reduced till is about 12 millimeters. What's really interesting between those two there in the center is that the same tillage tool used by the same operator on the same day at the same depth. The only difference is there's a little more residue on the surface with the sweep RT. And somehow that seems to be impacting soil water loss. And then, of course, negligible water loss with the no-till. You come back 4 days later and measure it again. That increases to 27 millimeters for the moldboard plow, about 20 millimeters there, 15, and then about 8. What's interesting is that if you put these values, the 20 millimeter particularly and the 27 millimeter value, into a water use production function, that's potential production loss of between 4 and 7 bushels. So one tillage event is losing a lot of water, and it does cost production. Okay, so summarize that slide. The rate of water loss is 10 times greater in the first 2 days rather than later. So we're seeing stage one evaporation. The rate of water loss is 8 to 20 times greater in the tilled layer than in the untilled subsoil. Residue is important even if cut and laid flat, compare the RT to the CT. And with one tillage event, we're seeing anywhere between 15 millimeters and 27 millimeters of water loss. Okay, so this is how we think people ought to farm. We ought to plant it right and directly into the stubble. And there's all kinds of reasons for that, and we'll just put those there. And theoretically, that should increase water use, water storage, and so it should impact yields. But we thought we ought to test that. So we have an experiment that was started back, 10 years ago now, 10, 12 years ago. And it was conducted for 8 years. It was a wheat, sorghum, millet fallow. Brian Henry was with me at the time and started the experiment. We could have easily put corn in there, but we thought, let's work with sorghum because we don't know much about sorghum there at Akron, so we were going to learn something. And four replications being managed with the stripper header, leaving the stubble as tall as you can, and then four replications that were managed with a conventional header, cutting about, 8 to 10 inches tall, 20 to 25 centimeter stubble height. I'm just going to show you the last 4 years of data. I could show you all 8 years of data, but I'm just going to show you the last 4 years of data. The idea being, it takes 4 years for that rotation to get established. Let's look at the 4 years when it's going to make a difference. These are all no-till. None of it's been tilled. But just stripper header management, taller residue, is impacting yields, significantly impacting yields. We're seeing 540 kilos per hectare more grain yield in the wheat crop plots there with the stripper header, about 570 more kilograms per hectare with sorghum, and almost 1,000 kilograms per hectare more in the millet. Okay, concluding remarks. First thing is no-till is really all about residue management for us. It increases precipitation storage efficiency. No-till allows us to increase cropping system intensity. We can go from a wheat fallow system to a wheat corn fallow system to a wheat corn millet fallow or four crops in 5 years for that matter. I've got farmers out there that are 80% cropped. No-till improves soil quality and the microclimate. You saw that with Brian's data. We've also published multiple papers showing increases in soil organic matter, soil organic carbon, particulate organic matter, aggregate stability, and water infiltration. No-till increases water use efficiency of dryland systems. I think that's pretty obvious. No-till increases available soil water at planting time. Not always, but most of the time, right? Most of the sites, only the Swift Current site, we weren't able to prove that out. All of these things, increased soil water, changes in microclimate, improvements in surface properties and soil quality, are impacting grain yields, and we're getting an increase in grain yields. And so for our part of the world, the northern and central Great Plains, some aspect of no-till is going to continue to be there. I mean, Al and I were talking about how expensive it is, with herbicides not working like they used to. But there's still going to be some aspect of this because you can't do these things without no-till. One more thing I want to share with you. I shared this idea with some graduate students a few years ago, and I think it's still relevant, at least for me, so I'm going to go ahead and put it out there and take my lumps later if it was the wrong thing to do. But I think it's good. It reads this way. Truly humble people are centers of peace. Truly humble people are centers of peace. Because they have no fear for their own failures or the success of others. Love that. Okay, so I'm going to stop there and be glad to entertain any questions and try to answer the ones as best as I can. Thank you. The question was, let's go back to that slide. Do we have time? Okay, good. I tend to get nervous and I go really fast. Let's see. So it's interesting. If you plot and I didn't put that graph in, I thought about it. The water loss later on with no-till is actually higher because there's water to lose. See, the others have dried out. But with no-till, you're still losing water because there's water to lose. And actually the rate of water loss is slightly higher when you look at that 4-day time period. Yes?
Yeah, you showed some data that where you're getting more per each unit of preset, you're getting a better, more crop.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
today, but it plays out to be better.
What are farmers thinking about that? They're
pretty
risk in their bankers and their men.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of adoption of this practice primarily because they're making money doing it. Alan and I were talking about that right now, that it changes economics. Right now, when prices are we had a really nice rally the last, 5 years, and now wheat prices are low again, and herbicide costs are going up because of herbicide-resistant weeds. So that changes the economics, but still there's a lot of adoption.
Sure. When was this pivot taking place? You referred to it as that time
For this slide right here?
Yeah, all of it.
Okay. For this slide, it was fallow period, so July and August.
So you're taking a follow through the winter and planting
the spring crop, but no follow. Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean talking about the like the wheat, corn, millet fallow? Yes. You'd plant the winter wheat, you'd harvest it in July, and the land would lie idle for 10 months, and then the next spring you'd plant your spring crop, whether it be corn or millet or whatever.
So when was the tillage
taken? No tillage in that. Yes, only in the wheat fallow.
So when was the tillage?
Okay, and during the summer, during the fallow period. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What's your perception in terms of how important the soil biology is in this particular thing? You know that my read on the literature is that if you move to no-till, you reduce tillage, and you're really against your ANF, that goes to high demand. We haven't really, we don't talk about that too much in terms of explaining how that
works. We know some things are happening. We know that, there was a paper with glomalin content, and we found that as we increased the rotation length or went to continuous cropping, you got increases in glomalin content, which is root exudate from mycorrhizal fungi. So we know some of that stuff is happening, but it's really hard to quantify. And David's made some measurements of, you might say something about that, David, with some of the things you've done with the cover crops. It didn't really matter what the crop was. It mattered whether you had a crop growing there or not. They all leak some carbon to the system, and if there was a crop growing there, you had more carbon leak, and so you had greater microbial activity. But it didn't seem to play out what you had there. I don't know if that covers it or not. Covers your question or not? Yes. Well, it certainly looks like that's what's going on with Brian's data at Swift Current. You know, there was no increase in soil water at planting time, but he still had increase in yield, had increased yields. Yes. I'm going to let Drew talk about that. We think that we need to, there is a place for tillage. We're not so strict about this that it's got to all be no-till, but we haven't thought of it strategically like maybe we should.
We need to get on with the next talk. Let's thank Merle again.